The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the closing market report for Monday, October 29th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, a date has been set for Senate floor debate on the Farm Bill. Also expect a number of amendments on the Senate floor impacting Farm Bill spending. And NASS and FFA is forming a strategic partnership. We'll have details. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason speaks with the head of a large farm management group about keeping close watch on expenditures in 2008. It's all on the Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On Monday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. December wheat at 854 and a quarter, up 26 and three quarters. July, 696, up 10. At the Chicago Board of Trade, December wheat, 828 and a half, up 28 and a half. March, 848, up 26. July, 691 and a quarter, up 14 and a quarter. December corn settled at 376, up 4. March, 393, up 4 and a quarter. May, 402 and 3 quarters, up 3 and 3 quarters. December, 422 and a half, up 2 and 3 quarters. November soybeans settled at 1011, up 15 and a half. January, 1028 and 3 quarters, up 15 and a half. March, 1043 and a half, up 16. November of next year, 980 and a quarter, up 9 and a quarter. December soybean meal settled at 280, up 220. January, 280-270, up 210. December soybean oil settled at 42.20, up 82. January, 42.58, up 72. October live cattle at the Merck settled at 94.25, down 35. December, 95.35, up 22.5. November feeders settled at 109.25, up 20. December lean hogs settled at 54.47.5, down 5. And February pork bellies settled at 84.10, up 57.5. Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, before we get into particulars, do you have some general comments about why we had such strength in the marketplace today?
Well, when you say marketplace, the first thing that comes to mind is the overall commodity sector in general. We got a dollar that continues to weaken, which, of course, makes our export products a lot more attractive to the world market. Invert dollars costs. You know, we're very competitive. The bear will turn right around and say, well, the high freight rates, which is true, offsets that somewhat. But it makes us competitive. And just look at the dollar, it's one of the cheapest currencies and offers opportunities as a buyer from on the world market, per se. So it's quite extraordinary, exciting to see us in this position. But when you look at agriculture alone, it sort of followed the coattails of the outside markets, sharply higher energy values. We saw crude oil move above $93 a barrel, based on December futures contract, gold at 20-year highs, Malaysia palm oil at all-time highs. So the tide's sort of floating all ships here, as we all have the tendency to move together here, at least over the short term here. And so it's quite exciting to see the market make some gains here as we move into late fall, early winter.
I want to particularly focus on the U.S. dollar for a moment. We made new all-time lows today, 76.78. The tick there, of course, we had the Fed meeting Tuesday and Wednesday, and most analysts are suggesting another quarter point decline in the Fed interest rate, and maybe the U.S. dollar is reacting ahead of that. If we don't get that decline, though, what might that imply for the dollar and then for the commodities?
Well, it could be a little concern there. There's people caught the wrong way, and they're needing a rate cut to sort of get them out of a jam, per se. And it'll probably happen as the Fed and government try to look for a way to slow the fear of this housing interest rate concern. We'll see what develops. But, you know, they can move at a quarter point here, a quarter point there. I wouldn't be surprised to see them go ahead and follow through with that. The main thing, though, in the economy is that you got to watch the big players in their position because, as you all well know, the people with the bucks is the one that moves the economy.
Let's turn to some commodities in particular now. Begin with the beans, which outside, it looks to me, the nearby November and the January contract made new contract highs today.
Well, the November's getting close, lead contract. The highs we made back here in late September up around that 10-17 area. So that's going to be the focus to look at the lead chart high there. The January's up around 10-33. We're fairly close there. It'll be important for the market to go ahead and move above there and stay above there. Failure to move above there and stay above those levels will sort of poke it or promote a double top on the charts. Imagine there's some buy stops above there. One was a trigger. They'd want to at least go up there and see what's above there. Technically, that's what we need to look at. Fundamentally, you need to keep an eye on demand. Need to keep an eye on not only China, whether or not they purchase some U.S. beans, but also to the crude oil, Malaysia palm oil market. Those are going to be key indicators to determine whether the beans can keep marching higher here as we move into the first part of November.
Technically, the next stop, 10:35?
Well, you can find a point on the charts about every 15 to 25 cents higher. Basically, the mid-target overall will be these highs we made over a few years ago in this 10-50 level. Then after that, you got to go clear back to the early 70s. So about every 15 to 20 cents, there's going to be some type of magical benchmark to shoot for.
This morning, I asked you about the wheat market in terms of whether or not there would be demand enough to bring us back into an above an uptrend line from through the from the May and the July and the August lows, and there we are. We are right there today at that point.
Yeah, the downtrend line's intact. We'll see if we can poke through it. The momentum indicators indicate we've got a shot to poke through it. We've got some trend divergences here, which suggests that the market's rhymed to see some type of recovery here. Demand-wise, they'll keep an eye on Egypt, see if they come forward. See some of these other countries come forward. But probably the main factor overnight will be ABARE. The Australian agency's expected to put out an unexpected production estimate this evening. We'll watch the overnight trade. There's belief that they will lower their crop, Australian wheat crop, down to 11 to 12.5 million metric tons. And that's down from their last estimate of 15.5. You know, failure to come that low could send wheat tumbling in the overnight trade. A number below that could send wheat up another 30-cent trading limit in the overnight trade.
So you believe that the trade is fairly trading at 11 to 12 million metric ton Australia crop at this time?
Well, we feel that's what they're going to come out with, correct.
All right, then. With all the strength that we saw in the marketplace, one must ask you, do you take on any more hedging position?
Well, we were in the opinion that the market would, especially the cash market, I'm talking producer right at the moment here, would trend sideways to higher as we go into Thanksgiving or sometime here in late November, early December. So we would recommend be a holder in through here and use these ups to sort of scale into it to get to where you need to be. We feel that once a producer pays minimum storage to the elevator or fills up the grain bin, it's awful hard to shake it loose, so therefore it creates some upward pricing as end users come forward here to try to gather some near-term coverage. So we feel there's some opportunity the upside. As a trader, we feel you follow the hourly bar chart, the 18 bars, the trend's up. You should be long. That's the trend. When the thing rolls over, you get out. It's fairly simple to follow the technical indicators here in the short-term sector because it's going to be quite a roller coaster as we move into late year.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois, and he joins us every Monday afternoon during the closing market report. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight, he says clear, lows ranging from 32 in some southern locations to 42 in northern and west central Illinois. Tomorrow, sunny, with highs ranging from 64 in northeastern Indiana to 72 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, wind speeds of 10 to 20 miles an hour, with a minimum afternoon relative humidity between 30 and 40%. Extended forecast, open weather for field work expected over the coming week. There may only be a few light showers in northern into some central sections on Wednesday afternoon into the evening. And another weak front may trigger a few widely scattered light showers on Friday night. In agricultural news, the Farm Bill is expected to be taken up by the full Senate on November 5th. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid made the announcement on Friday while offering congratulations to the Senate Agriculture Committee, saying in his words, "I've seen a number of farm bills coming through here. It's certainly an improvement." A number of floor amendments are expected to be debated, including a $250,000 hard cap on annual subsidy payments for couples, phase out of direct payments, and an amendment that would allow Farm Credit System banks to make loans for biorefineries and Farm Credit to make more loans for rural housing. Meanwhile, governmental officials remain upset over Senate Agriculture Committee action. South Dakota Senator John Thune pushed through an amendment that would prevent Farm Service Agency from terminating most FSA offices targeted for closure this year. Mark Keenum is Undersecretary for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Services. Keenum says Thune's amendment ties the hands of FSA as it tries to modernize its operations.
That was the purpose of this whole reorganization plan. It was not a Washington down dictate to states that they must do anything. In fact, we have many states that have submitted their plans and recommended no office consolidations, and those plans were readily accepted.
FSA has received consolidation plans from 12 states, and Keenum says 10 others are in the 120-day stage.
The secretary has signed off on their plans, and offices are either being consolidated or will very soon be consolidated. You have 20-plus states that have already been through this process, and the Thune Amendment would, if it becomes the law, would greatly hamper our ability at USDA to put together plans that will, in the end, provide better services to farmers. That's what our whole approach has been about.
USDA Acting Secretary Chuck Connors says the Senate Farm Bill lacks real reform, and some provisions are a step backwards, notably provisions that would raise loan rates and target prices for half a dozen commodities. In Connors' words, it's just simply bad policy, no reform at all. And Connor hinted that USDA has not thrown in its reform towel.
Farm bills are always tough, flooding, but at the end of the day, they get done. I am confident this bill will get done in a timely way. I also believe strongly that the administration is going to play a critical role here, both in the Senate floor debate and in the House-Senate Conference Committee.
The Bush administration has made it clear that it will veto a bill that uses tax increases for funding. Applications are pouring in for Iowa's Beginning Farmer Tax Credit Program, which is designed to ease land rents for young producers. Program directors say by the end of September, there have been 233 approved applications. Under the program, producers with a net worth less than $300,000 can get a 5% tax credit on their state income taxes. If they crop share, the tax credit for the landowner is 15% of the annual lease payment. A biofuels analyst says the capital cost to meet a 36 billion gallon renewable fuel standard by 2022 is $105.5 billion. John Urbanchuk also notes that the farm credit system has been a major source of funding for the ethanol industry. As of June 30th of this year, having on its books $3.9 billion in outstanding loans and loan commitments to ethanol producers. USDA has announced a strategic partnership with the Future Farmers of America to develop online learning tools and classroom lessons about the National Agricultural Statistics Service Census of Agriculture. NAS Administrator Ron Bosecker.
The message from FFA will emphasize how much these data are used throughout the agricultural community. I think that's not as broadly and widely recognized among producers themselves.
NAS will mail out census forms on December 28th. Completed forms are due back by February 4th. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The head of a large farm management group in the Midwest is cautioning farmers to watch the expense side of their ledgers very closely. Todd Gleason has more.
The Westchester Group, headquartered in Champaign, Illinois, manages about 100,000 acres, primarily in the Midwest. Murray Weiss is CEO and chairman of the company. He says agriculture, the value of land, has changed dramatically in the last 2 years.
It's only 13, 14 months ago, Todd, that we had corn prices in the low $2 range and soybeans well under $6 a bushel. And the income component of operating a Midwest farm today is obviously dramatically changed. As a result of that, we've seen prices move higher from both a land value perspective as well as from a cash rent perspective. But the same token, my air of caution today would be, at the same time, we're seeing a fairly significant change in the expense side of operating Midwestern grain farm today, primarily from a seed perspective, but also from a fertilizer perspective. We've seen dramatic changes on the cost side, which has put a little bit of a damper on what, in fact, is evolving here. But same token, this has resulted in a fairly substantial increase in going into 08 relevant to cash rent values, which you and I touched on the other day. By the same token, I throw the caution flag, if you will, relevant to keeping a very close eye on the expense side, because these expenses as we go into the new year are going to be a new and different game plan, if you will. But again, we've seen a nice change in and on the asset side, at least if you're an owner or a seller, but you've seen a nice change. If you're a buyer, probably not so nice, but it's a major change, Todd, to say the least.
A nice change, but one that's coming this month with higher cash rent values for farmers across the Midwest. Wise says, in his mind, it represents the continued consolidation of farms that has been taking place since the early 1900s, with farm sizes growing. It does not herald the end of the small family farm, but Murray Wise says efficient Midwest farms do share some common characteristics.
The real efficient operator that I see out here today is again, typically a family operation where they own somewhere between 20 to 35%, let's say, of their acres, and they're leasing the rest, and they're amortizing, again, an effective line of machinery over that combination of owned land and leased land. So I think, generally speaking, the bulk of the operations that I'm most familiar with out here are pretty profitable today, is the bottom line. And yet, again, I caution every one of us, I've already redundantly done twice. I think the expense side is something we need to keep a real close eye on a go-forward basis.
Murray Wise is the CEO and chairman of the Westchester Group, located in Champaign, Illinois. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Wyatt.
Well, good afternoon.
Has corn basis begun to firm in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it continues to firm up. We're 10 under nearby corn today, 10 under on the beans also, actually.
How much more do you would anticipate the basis to firm, if it does indeed firm, over the next month?
To be honest, I don't see much basis appreciation from now really until the first of the year. On the cash side, on the deferred bids, I think there's still room for that to tighten in. But I would say from now until the first of the year, not only us, but all the facilities are going to concentrate on picking up their ground pile corn and loading that out to make room for the January deliveries.
So the deferred side, you might see basis improvement of?
Oh, we could start with a few cents on the January-February time frame, and it depends on how heavy the movement is. I have a pretty good feeling that all the bins in the country are full right now, and once people start to move those out, it'll depend on how fast that happens. How much the basis is pressured, but I'm still confident that the summer basis levels will get much better.
You have quite a big pile of corn out there at the Andersons, what, about 4 million bushels?
Yes, right at 4.2.
And so how long before that gets picked up?
Started picking that up today, and at 100,000 bushels per day, we're looking at 42 days, so right at 6 weeks, but I would say count on it being gone by the end of December.
And after that, what will you begin to focus on?
We'll just try to keep the elevator full, keep trying to bid for bushels coming in, and make sure the trains are there to load out.
Would you anticipate in this neck of the woods much more corn and or beans coming in after the first of the year?
As far as inbound receipts?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. We've got quite a bit of people showing interest in selling the January-February time frame. It's a good time to spread the labor out and not to mention there's pretty good prices. And as the board works higher, it gets harder to justify carrying grain into the summer months just based on your cost of money.
Why don't you share with your prices today and also give us a little sense of your deferred prices?
Yeah, our cash corn today is $3.66. The January is $3.78. Going out to the July, we're $3.99. Cash beans are $10.01. January is $10.14. And our July soybeans are $10.40.
Thank you much, Wyatt.
Yes, have a good one, Dave.
You too. Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In about 2 minutes, we'll have agricultural weather with the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Champaign authorities are releasing little additional information on the arrest of a man in Tennessee charged in a July 2006 double homicide. 35-year-old Kenneth Sean Kelly faces two first-degree murder charges in the deaths of Jerry and Sue Hay, who were found dead in their southwest Champaign home on July 4th of last year. Kelly's currently in custody on $1 million bond in Johnson City, Tennessee. He's believed to be a resident there. Police Chief R.T. Finney says it's still unclear what relationship Kelly had with the victims, but he says the suspect formerly lived in Champaign. Two additional suspects are in custody on unrelated charges, but authorities aren't yet releasing their names. The first day of filing for the next February's Illinois primary has brought out candidates wanting to try to be first on the ballot. Presidential organizing committees appeared at the State Board of Elections office in Springfield this morning, along with candidates for state legislative office. In Champaign County, a handful of candidates have filed for county primaries, including two Democratic candidates for one District 6 seat on the county board. A federal judge in Chicago has refused to stop a suburban school district from observing a moment of silence as required by a new state law. But Judge Robert Gettleman today allowed the suit aimed at ending the practice to move forward. Gettleman was asked to issue a temporary restraining order that bars Buffalo Grove High School from holding the moment of silence. The suit was filed by atheist activist Rob Sherman, whose 14-year-old daughter, Dawn, is a freshman at the school. Governor Rob Blagojevich had vetoed the measure, saying he had doubts it would be constitutional, but the legislature overrode his veto. A study by researchers at Johns Hopkins University found 55 so-called dropout factories in the state of Illinois. Those are high schools that held on to 60% or fewer of their students from freshman to senior year over 3 years, from 2004 to 2006. The study found nearly 1,700 high schools nationwide in that category. Overall, the schools on the list are in large cities or high-poverty rural areas and often have high minority populations. Of the 55 schools from Illinois on the list, 35 were in Chicago. Indiana had 10 high schools on the list. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Let's begin in South America, specifically Brazil, where it looks like it's a tale of two geographical areas between the north and the south regarding rain.
Yeah, well, the southern areas have been the wetter areas if you look over the entire month of October. However, as we worked our way to the middle of October and over the past week, the northern portion of the bean and corn belt in Brazil has favored much better than earlier in the month, and specifically Mato Grosso, Goiás, São Paulo, and southern Minas Gerais. That area has received, broadly speaking, 25 to 50 millimeters of rainfall over the past week, and so while conditions were very dry earlier in the month in that portion of the belt, they got rains last week, and the pattern here is another episode of rains in that northern belt next week, or actually this week towards the weekend. And so while there were some dryness concerns earlier in the month, kind of getting the rain start a little later than climatologically you would expect, things are looking up at this point.
Is it actually too wet in some places like Rio Grande do Sul?
Yeah, Dave, that's a good point. The rains that are expected this week, Rio Grande do Sul up to Santa Catarina and southern Paraná, are going to be quite heavy. It's 50 millimeters up to 100 millimeters. So you're talking a good 3 to 6 inches of rain potentially in areas that have already been moist so far this season, and that's with a slow frontal boundary moving northward. And as a result, there could be some localized flooding in areas that get the heaviest thunderstorm activity this week.
Turn your attention to Argentina, please.
Sure. Argentina's frequent but non-excessive rainfall events here over the next 10 days, and that's been the rule in Argentina. Well, they turned wet in late September, and they've gotten frequent but not an overdosage of rainfall in the past several weeks, and that continues to be the rule. Behind this front, they'll be moving up into southern Brazil this week. There will be a cooler than normal air mass settling over the Argentinian winter wheat and corn belt, but temperatures are expected to stay above freezing through the weekend, and so freeze is not a concern at this point.
What about the soft red and hard red winter wheat belt regions?
Yeah, the probably on the whole global scale right now, the area of most interest from a weather standpoint is the hard red winter wheat belt in the U.S. and in the western areas, western Kansas, western Oklahoma, and eastern Colorado. And those are areas, it's very kind of hit and miss, but probably a good 20-30% of the overall acreage of the hard red belt is very dry and excessively dry. They haven't seen rainfall in 4 weeks and barely any since the beginning of September. So while it's not the majority of the hard red belt, there is dryness concerns, and the pattern for the next 10 days is dry again for that region. So planting is going to be an issue in those areas that have been very dry.
southwestern Kansas, southeastern Colorado, those kind of places.
Exactly, and the panhandle of Oklahoma. It's that kind of that area of the Bell, which is the western acreage, and that tends to be pretty high-yielding acreage. So the weather forecast here does not look good for increased prospects of rainfall as we head into November.
Are there other places around the globe or in the U.S. you're keeping your eye on?
The only other place is late wheat here in Australia, and specifically Victoria, and one more shot of rain would do that acreage some good. And it looks like they'll get some later this week on a frontal passage. So other than that, things are rather quiet.
Thanks much, Josh.
Thanks, Dave.
Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, cash grain report, and weather on the web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the audio links.